He was a fantastic skipper, and man, was this he, when he got it together. I remember walking out as an 18-year-old to the crease and just see where this guy's coming from. And he was still bowling 140s. Back end of his career, was still bowling, and a great action. And I remember we lost in 2 days. So we walked into our change room and he looked around. He just came in and looked around the change room and he goes, "How's that for an umbrella opening up your?" Yeah. So welcome to first class cricket, young man.
Welcome to The Biggest Man in Cricket with your host, David Brooke.
So here we are in beautiful Paul. What a beautiful golf estate. And we are sitting here with arguably one of South Africa's greatest, not even just cricketers, but greatest sportsmen, Alan Donald. Thank you very much for being on The Biggest Man in Cricket and welcoming us into your home. How are you doing?
I'm good, thanks. Yeah, thanks for having me on your show. I know we've been talking about this for a little while. I've been following it, all the interviews. I enjoyed Peter Kirsten's one the other day.
Awesome.
So, by the way. Now I'm doing really well. We enjoying a bit of downtime before the season, the pre-season kicks off next month on the 1st of August. So yeah, no, it's like a chill at the moment.
You're involved with the Lions currently, but you're based still in Cape Town, yeah? But you're involved with a power coaching lineup in that Lions setup.
I remember the last sort of days of 2023 Cricket World Cup when I was with Bangladesh. I had a phone call from Russell Domingo and he said, "Listen, what's your next move? Come and join the DP World Lions." And I thought, well, gosh, that sounds quite, and I looked at the squad and he said, "Well, Hashim Amla's here. It would be nice to have you on the coaching team." And I'm really enjoying it, really. It's been 3 years. I cannot believe it. We're entering a fourth year now with the DP World Lions. It's what a great ground. I've had some fond memories playing there, but now working there with the DP World Lions is a fantastic experience.
You guys are obviously setting the benchmark in domestic cricket. How important is the domestic cricket still in South African cricket as a whole in terms of the production line?
Well, I think one of John O'Leafright's missions and with Russell was to get as much experience in the dressing room and to uplift the not just the skill level but the mindset. So we constantly working on an international standard. And I don't think at domestic level that's talked about enough. What does it really take for a young guy to set out his stall to become an international cricketer? And when you get up there playing for South Africa, what does that environment look like? So that's our main mission is to get the skill level and the standard up there to make them realize, okay, this is what it takes to be, to have Hash there and to have Jonty involved now, to have Adrian Birrell involved as well as
the
now
power lineup.
So it's really really cool to not only to work with them but also for those guys to experience that to experience the standard that we're talking about.
When you see these youngsters coming through, their first day at. There might be an academy player that's moved up and, what do you, they're completely different to how you entered into the game. Like what do you say to them on their first day? A youngster maybe doesn't even know who Alan Donald is, your career was done by the time he was born,
Look, it's first of all, it's really, for Russell is all about that inclusivity. It's all about that. Come and see what the Lions dressing room looks like, and it's come and experience what a team talk is about. When we talk about white ball, red ball, T20 mindset, 50 overs, red ball, test match mentality. So they become the ears of the dressing room first up. So we don't, and Russell is a very chilled guy. He creates a very chilled environment. And so there's nothing like this over the top stuff. So But it's the individual chats coming from me about our bowlers. Mm. So we don't talk about four-day cricket. We talk about test matches. So what does that test match mentality look like? Mm. So this is what we're about. This is how we're going to go approach it. This is the why and the how. Mm. So they become just ears and experience that. And we don't, for us now, we don't overpower that and say, listen, this is what you need to do. This is, so we slowly, slowly integrate. So for us, it's just about, we know they're not going to say much.
Mm.
So, and for them to be part of the dressing room and experience, a young kid comes in there, he sees Rassie van der Dis and he says Themba Bavuma, Reeza Hendricks, Ryan Rickleton. So it's all they want. And I was the same. When I played against the mighty Transvaal or Western Province, when I was an 18-year-old, Robbie East took me into the Transvaal dressing room and he just said, shut up and listen.
Mm.
That's when just all you need to do is, you're not going to have a beer, not yet, but for you, the most important thing is, all you're going to do is listen. This is how you learn. It doesn't happen anymore, unfortunately. It doesn't. Mm. But this is a way now for us to have those young kids with us now. And that's what AD Birrell is busy with now, currently.
Mm.
The last month or so, he started in May,
yeah.
is to align those academy and high-performance players of the DP World Lions way.
It's really impressive. And it really, the Lions are... It kills me to say it, but the Lions are really setting the benchmark for the next generation of domestic cricket in this country, and ultimately the Proteas. But Alan, I want to kind of take you back, if you wouldn't mind, right to the very beginning, before you were known as White Lightning, and before the zinc and all the fame and the fortune and all those records. Where did it all start for Alan Donald? Who was Alan Donald growing up?
I was born and bred in Bloemfontein. I think I've got a photo of me standing in my nappies, and nappies didn't look like they do today. I think it was more like a towel. You were wrapped around it, I think. And standing on a piece of plot with my mom in the background. That's where I grew up. Lots of memories of playing in a massive yard at the back. Mm. And then really, as you know, primary school started for me at JBM Matsoch School in Bloem. Then I moved to another school, President Brand School, and then ended up in Grey College. Mm. And that's where things at a young age started to happen for me, more like under 13. I was quickly spotted by Mr. Johan Volstedt, who was the headmaster for Grey College for a very long time. And he came over to a primary school practice, and he introduced himself, and I had no idea who this guy is, even though if I was in the primary school, and that's where the affiliation quickly went, the friendship started between myself and Hansi Cronje and Frans Cronje, and the Cronje family as such. So, and that's where my friendship grew and grew, and I spent weekends there playing in the backyard. And Evi Cronje was the referee when we played rugby, and he was the umpire when we played backyard cricket. So, and that's how this real tight friendship grew with the Cronje family. Mm. So slowly but surely, things got more, my fondness for rugby was the first love was rugby.
You played?
Yeah. Not very well, but but I was willing to give it a crack and, played all sorts of sports.
Position in rugby?
So I played 10, 12, 15.
Okay.
So, but my nickname was Nas because I kicked everything away. I only played two first team games. Okay. They've had enough of me kicking the ball away. So, but yeah, I mean, I don't even know what it's called now, but in grade whatever, standard five.
Grade seven.
My dad decided, no, sports not, you're not going to be, get a spot, proper job when you leave school.
Mm.
And so he took me out and put me into Hartiers Louis Botha, which is a fantastic school, really good school, known for its athletics and rugby.
Okay.
And back then, Hartiers Louis Botha was the only school to beat Grey College. I think that's the one and only time in 1982 or something like that.
In rugby.
Some big kids.
Yeah.
6-0 the score was. I think Grey College had about 95 times to go and score behind the poles, and they didn't kick one goal.
Yeah.
So that's our claim to fame. But I think then I realized that the struggle for me was to, how am I going to break into the Free State cricket fraternity? Mm. You know, I'm still young. I'm in grade 8. And it's, you know, it's not really a cricket school.
Mm.
So, but we played in the leagues.
Mm.
So in the domestic league. So
okay.
At the Bloemfontein, you know, only Saturdays, only from, I think, 40 over games. And so it was really hard, but, you know, you managed to do that and played for SA Schools 84, 85. 84, I was carrying drinks at Newlands with Daryl Cullinan being the captain.
Oh, wow.
And we played against the Western Province. Got obviously absolutely walloped. but then in 85, I played with Gary Kirsten. He was the captain of SA Schools teams then in East London. Mm. But yeah, I mean, that's how I went through the school system. And but yeah, things got better after that.
I would say it definitely got better. But tell me how, because obviously South African cricket at that time was still amateur. But you got through to Warwickshire in the UK. How did that move happen? Who facilitated things there?
Yeah, we played against Transvaal, and I think Corey Van Sale broke his foot in the same game. And
I wanted to ask you about the game. Sorry, just Chris Broad, I read, was the captain. That's Stuart Broad's father, the English. What was he doing in the Free State?
So he was our overseas player.
Okay.
So back then we had, and I think soon after that, you were allowed to have two overseas players.
Mm.
And it soon became three. So, but I was, I wasn't going to play that game against Transvaal.
Mm.
And then Chris came up to me and said, young man, you're playing. Corey is injured.
Mm.
Only managed to take one wicket in 80, that was 85.
Mm.
So 86, 87, the following year was the Rebel Tour, the Aussie Rebel Tours, post the West Indies Rebel Tours. But, you know, as a young man, you knew what was going on.
Mm.
You're living in an apartheid era. And, you know, you're thinking, you know, how are you going to break through? All you've got is a strong first-class system.
Mm.
And you're playing against some unbelievable players as a youngster. I think that 86, when I got seven wickets against Transvaal, and then I got a break to play the last unofficial test match against Australia at St. George's. And then on the last day, Dr. Bacher walked into the change room with a guy called David Brown. I had no idea who David Brown is. And he tapped me on the shoulder. He says, this is David Brown. He said, we are doing an exchange thing with Warwickshire County Cricket Club.
Mm.
And David saw, he was here for this test match, and saw that you've got plenty of talent. How would you feel like going over to for a season to experience county cricket?
Mm.
And all I've been doing is my uncle, who was the headmaster of Bremery Primary School, Des Donald, we subscribed for the Cricketer and the Wisden magazine.
Mm.
And in my uncle's room, he had books this high. And I was just paging through them every time. And I thought, wow, I'd love to play county cricket one day. And that's how that thing kicked off.
Mm.
And it became that's basically my second home. I mean, that's where I met my wife, and that's where my kids were born. And what a relationship we still have with the club.
13 years at the county arguably one of the greatest overseas signings that they've ever had, and we'll go into the detail. But I wanted to know, and was there ever a chance that you could qualify for England?
Yeah. Yeah, so Alan Lamb, and I remember bumping into Alan Lamb and Robin Smith, bless him, and his brother Chris Smith. And of course, we were at an event. I don't know what it was, but all three of them, we all had a beer together, and Lammy dropped the thing in and said, "Listen, Al, do you fancy, you know, South Africa is not going to get any better." Mm. So you fancy playing for England? And the lights went off, and but of course you're gullible back then, and you think, wow, what an opportunity. But there was that was in 1989, sort of, and Dr. Bacher, I told Dr. Bacher, I had a lot of, and I still have, I had a lot of respect for Dr. Bacher. He was honest, and Doc said to me, "Alan, just wait 12 months, I promise you. South Africa will be back. I can't tell you when, but it will be." And then I got, in 1990, I played county cricket, and I got a call, and Dr. Bach is sitting at Lord's, and he said, "South Africa's just been voted back in."
Sure.
And I was like, I'm actually getting gooses here. But he told me, and we are going to the Cricket World Cup in 92.
Yeah.
So, and I that's it, mind made up.
Yeah.
And that was a great moment.
You almost like you were selected 2 years in advance, basically.
He said, but he said, don't make a decision on England.
Yeah.
You're going to represent South Africa in a cricket World Cup, and we're going to have a little trip to India first.
A little trip.
Eden Gardens, 100,000 people. Madness. How was that? Unbelievable experience. Yeah. To arrive at Calcutta with hundreds of thousands. I don't think there's enough camera footage of that.
Yeah.
You know, these days you whip out a phone.
Yeah.
That, we got off on the tarmac. We went on a cargo plane, of all things. We went on a cargo
plane.
From South Africa.
Oh, my word.
They put seats in this thing, and all sorts of who's who in South African cricket was on that plane. And we arrived at Calcutta, and they told us to get off. And the passports were taken, stamped, brought back in a bus. And that trip from the airport to the hotel was supposed to take 35 minutes. That took 3.5 hours. And every ounce of the roads were lined with flags, welcome back. It was an unbelievable experience.
That must have been, for somebody who, you played county cricket, so you've seen professional cricket, but coming from Bloem, I don't even know how your English was at that time.
No, it was pretty broken, but...
But like that must have been absolutely surreal.
It was.
But daunting at the same time.
You keep looking out and you think, is this for us? why are these people so nice to us?
Yeah.
Like, you know, so when we finally got to the hotel and the first, you know, it was just special. Everything was just amazing. Mm. You know, you sit there and you think, wow, you got to pinch yourself. We're actually in India.
Mm-hmm.
And we're playing. And then we got the squad that India... And I've seen Ravi Shastri.
Mm.
I've seen the years of young Sachin Tendulkar.
Yeah.
You know, so it was absolutely surreal. And then, of course, we just had a small practice where 15,000 people rocked up to watch us practice.
Insane.
It was like, no, this is how things get done in India. And they told us, Clive Rice was obviously, he asked the guy, he said, "No, it's sold out weeks ago." He said, "What's the capacity?" He said, "Tomorrow there will be, in 2 days from now, 107,000 people will be in the stadium."
Madness.
And on game day from the hotel, and it's not a long trip from the hotel, the Grand Oberoi, I won't ever forget it, the Grand Oberoi, magnificent hotel. It's about 10-15 minute trip to the field and to the ground, and it was just lined. Thousands and thousands with wanting to see, get a glimpse.
And love.
Yeah, just like,
yeah.
Okay, well, these people absolutely, they've waited so long to see what South Africa got in terms of talent. And when we arrived at the ground and we walked through the back entrance at Eden Gardens and you walk onto the field, there wasn't a spare seat. It was packed.
Crazy.
And there were thousands outside So yeah, then we knew, now this is real. This is an.
When you're running in there, what did you, firstly the heat must have been something that you guys had never.
Luckily, we were there at a time when it was sort of just a sort of winterish.
Okay.
So it wasn't
only 98% humidity rather than 100%.
Yeah. So. You know, we were just nervous about everything, and Doc Bacher was, you know, Procky was our coach, and Mike Proctor, and so Kepler, no, the Kepler wasn't there, was he? I can't remember. Jimmy Cook was opening the batting. And I remember those two guys were then, Jimmy was, he couldn't hold a bat. I think he was out first ball.
Jimmy said that Andrew Hudson was so nervous that he knew that he had to take the first ball.
Yeah. So, but I mean, it was all met with after the toss when we all walked onto the field and the noise in that stadium was, you know, if that was just for us walking onto the field, what's it going to be like when Ravi Shastri, it's a boundary, you know. So, but the experience was absolutely surreal. It was three ODIs, and having, I think for me, county cricket was a massive stepping stone.
Mm.
And I had a taste of playing against some of the best cricketers that helped shape me. And because I wasn't that scared of that environment, all the my opponents.
Mm.
I wasn't like fearful because I've played against Tendulkar, I've played against Ravi Shastri, I've played against Azharuddin.
Mm.
And so
they were already playing county cricket. Yeah.
You know, so, and having walked away there with a 5-wicket haul that day was wow. That was you know, if this was international cricket, this is the place where I want to be living.
Do you still get to go to India, but do you ever go for the IPL? Or?
Gosh, yeah. I mean, we've had many trips. I had 5 seasons in the IPL, 2 with the Pune Warriors, and unfortunate what happened there, but and then 3 with RCB. So
you still feel the love from that fan base there? Like,
still in touch with lots of people there. It's a tight franchise. I'm so chuffed for them.
Mm.
Having rocked up the last 2 years, and Andy Flower has done a fantastic job. Firstly, in recruiting, and then just the passion that Virat Kohli brings for the franchise. Mm. You know, he loves that place. It's a great place, Bangalore or Bengaluru. Mm. But now they've shown 2 years in a row that they're going to be tough to be topple. So, yeah, all regards to them.
I wanted to ask you about your relationship with Clive Rice, because we've spoken to the likes of Jimmy Cook, you know, Caper and those kind of guys. But you were quite a youngster still when Clive was very experienced. What was that like, kind of growing up in that environment with Clive Rice as a captain?
Well, I heard so much about, you know, Mike Proctor, Garth Lehrou, and Clive Rice playing in the Packer series.
Mm.
Back then, and apparently Garth Lehrou was the quickest out of all of them.
Mm.
And Mike Proctor was swift, pretty swift as well. But Ricey, I took to Ricey because it's so cool having to sit next to him and just listen to what he says about the game and talking about setting up batsmen. I know a lot of young cricketers would never, ever have had access to a cricket brain like him.
Mm.
Like he had a, if you put, and the luxury you had at county cricket to have Richard Hadley and Clive Rice play together and go and sit in their change room.
Unreal.
And just talk about, and I think Sir Richard Hadley was amazing. I think no one is better than setting up a batsman than Richard Hadley was, because he just was. You could listen to him for hours. Mm. I even bought a video of his that I still got, and I would love to play it to some youngsters today about thinking, about outthinking, outsmarting batters. Mm. That is a lesson. Mm. That is seriously, and that information, and Clive Rice was truly special to listen to those guys, because my word, not only was Ricey a tough man, but he was a fantastic skipper. And man, was this when he got it together. I remember walking out as an 18-year-old to the crease and just see where this guy's coming from. And he was still bowling 140s. Back end of his career, was still bowling, and a great action.
Mm.
And I remember we lost in 2 days. So we walked into our change room and he looked around. He just came in and looked around the change room and he goes, "How's that for an umbrella opening up your..." Yeah, so welcome to first-class cricket, young man. So, and I'll never forget that saying. Never, never. "How's that for opening umbrella?" And you know where that's going. But, I still use that saying. But the information was priceless of Clive Rice. And I stayed in touch, you know.
That if you look at your roles that you've taken on post career, it's all been kind of assistant coaches or bowling coaches. Back then, you didn't have that. You had head coach, and you just had the experience around you. Like when you look at the experience around you, going, did you learn more from those players, or 100%. Did you learn more from the coach? Was the 100%. Coach more like a organizer kind of thing?
And the IPL is the same. You learn more from international cricketers than you ever learn from you always shake hands with coaches and you have discussions and you, but when you have a guy, you know, Shane Watson talking about batting or talking about being an all-rounder, Virat Kohli talking about tactics or his gut feel on things, then you have AB de Villiers. And you have Chris Gayle, and you can go on. Mm. But you sit in a conversation, and you just ears, even now as a coach, about different countries. So or different mindsets on the shortest format of the game. So that for me was an eye opener in 5 years in IPL. But you're right. Coaches will do what coaches do, and they do what they have to do. But when it comes to players, you learn more from them, 100%.
I want to just talk briefly about the 92 World Cup. We had a great chat with Adrian Caper about the 92. It's the generation that ignited my love for why I'm now the biggest man in cricket, and this podcast is a thing because of that era. But did you, when you came into the public eye and the South African eye and then the world cricket eye, did you realise then, okay, it's no longer just Alan Donald playing quietly in county cricket or in provincial cricket. Now you actually have this national responsibility of what it means to be a South African cricketer?
Yeah. So I think that so Kepler, who was the captain of that 92 World Cup, spoke a little bit about that. Now it's about building some sort of a leadership base. Mm. So I didn't really knew a lot about being a leader. I was passionate about what I do, and sometimes I said some stuff, but it's not about the stuff you say. It's about your actions. But I met a guy called Alan Jones. Alan Jones, he coached the Wallabies in the 80s, and he's a very controversial figure in Australia. Mm. But Kepler introduced me to him, and he spoke exactly what you're saying now about the spotlight.
Mm.
What is it like representing your country? What comes with it? And how are you going to respond within your role?
Mm.
And that conversation of then later, Hansie Cronje took that to the next level in terms of leadership. I remembered the night before the first game against Australia, we knew nothing about World Cups. Mm. We didn't really, you know, it's a World Cup.
Yeah.
But how? Oh, like yeah. How are we didn't overplan. We didn't. Procky ran a very open ship as into, okay, we just adapt. Every day we just adapt.
Mm.
We didn't over talked about Australia, but that night before, I mean, it was sleepless, to be honest. Mm. So we had a few beers. It was like, now the Oaks are just like, I don't know what they do before big games like that. But
probably not a few beers. They have a steak maybe and some spinach. And,
but I had a message under my door, and And I thought, well, okay, I'm playing. I know I'm playing, but what's the envelope about? When I opened it up, it was from Alan. And he said, it was a nice message. He said, you know, one day a lot of people already are talking about you, but you're going to get a lot of write-ups in your career. Talent is not just everything. But your actions every single day on the training ground, not on the field, on the training ground, will be scrutinized.
Mm.
Yes, and I kept that. Mm. I kept that. I gave it to my kids. And he said, listen, you're going to get a lot of slaps on the butt, and people will tell you how good you are. Mm. He said, but it's not. So you read down the phone, you cut out a lot, and he said, you know, ultimately, it's not how good you are, mm. but it's how good do you want to be today. And that hit me.
Mm.
That hit me.
Mm.
And just at the bottom, he says, you don't, it's not how good you want to be, it's how good you want to be today at training.
Mm.
So he said, when you walk down the steps tomorrow and the captain looks back at you, he's not going to worry about Alan Donald.
Mm.
He knows that man's got it covered,
mm.
because he trained really well.
Yeah.
So he said, what happens on the field is automatic, because mm. your leadership will take over.
Mm.
And that's what we coach today.
Mm.
That's what the message that we're trying to get across to young guys today is exactly that.
Mm.
So young guys today are, you know, or younger guys today are, I think, is under pressure, because mm. you're worried about your place. You're worried about, am I going to get a contract next mm. year? So whereas we just played,
mm.
you know, we just went on with it and try and be as good as we can be. But that then is what you're saying, is that now you're in the South African spotlight. You're mm. in the, you are on the biggest stage of your life,
mm.
is how you're going to deal with that. So I think understanding what it means first to be a cricketer, but most importantly is how you lead within your role.
Mm. In that World Cup, your first ball, we've discussed this numerous times with a number of people, and Brian Aldridge, the late Brian Aldridge, I see that he passed away a number of years ago, but that fire that was burning inside you, and that first ball and you could have got the wicket. Just explain what happened, you know, after that. You know, we all know the result. South Africa beat Australia that day. But, like, what happened in the change room after that? Were you just – can you switch that off? Can you switch the white lightning off?
Well, I don't think I've ever been nervous bowling a first ball of the South African World Cup. I was just hoping I'd hit the keeper. I was absolutely – cooking myself,
really,
and yeah. And when you see the nick,
yeah,
and you see where Dave Richardson took that thing, and I'm gone, and the first contact was with a batter, because the batter looked at me and he just dipped his head. Yeah. He used the new.
He wasn't walking.
And he Aldridge Shamey, so I bowled the next ball, which was a booming wide, because the excitement's gone now.
Yeah.
And now I've got to get the next ball into an area. And he actually said to me, I'm sorry, I got that wrong. I wasn't ready for it.
Wow.
When he saw it on the big screen, I wasn't ready for it. So
immediately he said.
So I bowled the next ball, and he gave it away, and he said, sorry, I wasn't ready for that.
They must have pissed you off.
No, not ready for that. I wasn't ready for the first ball. But yeah, just afterwards was a nice chat. And I think that was our first real time when almost the entire – you know, yeah, you've got Alan Border leading a team into your change room,
mm-hmm.
and Jeff Marsh came in and he go, bad luck, mate. Bad luck. In Australia, we don't walk. And I just said, well, I gathered by your eye contact, you know, it was. But that's how we and they were so cool, relaxed, and we sat there for a couple of hours,
mm.
and we got home late. And the next morning we had to travel to New Zealand,
mm.
you know, so.
That's great, huh?
But yeah, we got humbled the next game, absolutely humbled by a very good New Zealand team.
I remember Adrian was telling us that I asked him about, you know, when you came back to South Africa, and it hit you how the Proteas, the South African cricket national team brand, had now officially been launched to the wider country now. How was that now? Because you had come from a very humble beginnings. You played county cricket. You'd gone over now and you came back and now all of a sudden everyone knew who you were. Was that daunting or did you enjoy that?
I think where it really, everyone knows that one-off test match against the West Indies where two of the greatest fast bowlers really showed us about respect and not to take the situation for granted, and we lost the test match. Straight after that, there was changes made, and it probably had to be made. Some younger squad, Hansie Cronje became captain soon after that. That's where everything changed. Everything, the thinking, the mindset, the approach, the planning, more structure. Bob Woolmer took over, the inventor, where Hansie Cronje was the communicator. And you couldn't get a better blend to have a coach and a captain like that, because I think then when we got that right, then the public eye saw a different team. And then you think, no.
You can swear, it's fine.
There's a much bigger responsibility to our people now than it's ever been. So we felt that. We felt a greater responsibility than we've ever experienced. But at the start, it was unstructured. It was, we just figure it out. So, I mean, then putting on the green and gold was a lot more stressful. I wouldn't say stressful, but you could just see that everyone in that change room, and there were some big names there back then in the 90s, the names just got bigger. I think what Hansie was building on and what Bob was building on, the culture, and, was immense. It really was.
What is your favorite part of that era?
We had a bunch of young and old guys that really just enjoyed each other's company. Fonnie de Villiers will always be not taking the game seriously, which was fantastic. And that was the fun part of it. It was relaxed. The fitness went to another level because on an off day, we all watched Hansie's demeanor when he came in on an off day. So if you're playing in a test match in India and you've batted all day and Hansie comes in and you watch him closely and he puts spikes on and he takes a raga ball, and we're going to play touchies now for 40 minutes. And that wasn't just for fun. It was
fitness.
He worked that fitness into it. So, yeah, we're going to run around for 40 minutes and we're going to cuck. We're going to sit the day out and just a little bit. Just to make sure that we still respect what we're here for.
But you've always been a fit guy. I mean, you're still in flipping good nick there. And
my knees disagree with that.
No. That's okay. The knees can, but you don't need your knees these days anymore. So, no, listen, that era of, we saw it. We saw the professionalism change. Everything was evolving. And, the whole cricket landscape was evolving. And then you kind of... You were obviously one of our top performers in World Cups. And then I just want to take you to that 96 World Cup and that moment with the UAE batsman, which was, I saw the highlight. They show it, they look back in World Cups on various moments and stuff. And that UAE batsman rocked up there, no helmet on, and he's facing one of the fastest bowlers in world cricket. I think it was this Pat Simcox that chirped to say, you've left your helmet behind. Like, are you sure you don't want to go and get it? And he was like, no, I'm good.
Yeah.
Just take me through that.
Well, we didn't know who was coming in next. And we saw this guy walking out and he's nice beard and he's got a floppy and he looks a bit like Clint Eastwood. And we think the first man that obviously jumps all over it is of course... the loudest mouth in cricket that we've ever had is Pat Simcox. He should never have been a spinner. He should never have been a spinner. He is just the most aggressive spinner I've ever come across. But he goes, it's hard to swear, but
go for it.
He just goes, fuck me, what are you doing? What are you doing? He goes, it is a 12th, and he goes like, no, I don't want, no, it's okay. And so Jonty said to me, oh, make sure it goes high, just even if it's a wide.
Yeah.
This guy cannot bat.
Yeah.
He's you can just see it.
Yeah.
And you couldn't have bowled a better bumper than that. I mean, and I promise you, it hit him so flush. My eyes just got big, and I went straight up there, and everyone was like, he's a hat falls on the ground and his hair stands up, so we all say to him, are you okay? And he just takes that thing and he just brushes his hair back, bang, straight up, and he goes, I'm okay.
Yeah.
A couple of
balls later he got out. He was having none of this.
Even Steve Buckner said to me, don't do that again. No, seriously. Yeah. He said, do not do that again. Just hit the stumps. Yeah, it's a scary moment. Yeah. And
I think you did the right thing. Disrespectful to do that to Alan Dollar. Who does you think he is?
Yeah, it's a red blanket to a bull. So I think that was, it was a bit silly, but silly of probably of me to do that. But yeah, I didn't mean to cause that much damage.
I wanted to ask, we haven't really had too many fast bowlers, but I wanted to ask, is fast bowling addictive?
Yes, it is, yeah.
Mm.
Yeah. I think you get to a spot where you almost, you know that you're, when the purple patch is that purple, and you're bowling effortlessly quickly, and you are constantly in the wickets, and it's another learning that we try and coach today is Mike Proctor always used to tell me that when you're in that space of almost total dominance and you feel invincible, you must feel why it's happening. You must understand why it's happening.
Mm.
Because one day you're going to come cry to your coach and you're going to say, well, geez, why am I, you know, I feel a bit, no, it's because you didn't respect that time when you're in that moment. So it's, fast bowling is like a golf swing. If it's slightly out of sync, it goes everywhere.
Mm.
So, but when you're in that much charge of what you're doing, there is no better moment than, place to be than when you're taking wickets and you are hitting the gloves hard. Then you say, well, what you're saying now is that you are totally addicted to that because you are in charge and you are the shit.
Mm.
But sometimes it doesn't all go that way, and then you have to find ways to get back to that.
You've obviously bowled to some of the greatest batsmen of all time, but it seemed to fire you up to bowl to those kind of quality players. You know, you've had some great battles with the likes of Michael Atherton, you know, Brian Lara, etc. Just some of those, you know, why did you love bowling to those guys so much?
There are three players that stand out for me as the, I wouldn't say that, there are some great players that you had a privilege to play against, but I think the first guy for me, and that's Tendulkar, is probably the most well organized, technically the best I've ever seen. Because when he played in Australia, South Africa, he was the only guy that triggered and lined the bounce up and the line and lined me up better. So it was harder to bowl to him. In India, he just, you know, you could use your hands a lot more because you can just hit through the line.
Mm.
So he didn't trigger. So I think the toughest, you just know that when he walks to the crease, you're going to up your game by two levels, three levels, and then the ball always is going to get thrown to you.
Mm.
So we've had our moments where we got him out, and we in Cape Town, he got a double hundred in Cape Town when Adam Bacher took a catch from Hal.
I remember down in, yeah,
when Brian McMillan bounced him up, and as he hit it, I thought that's a Dorothy, that's six. He sort of reverse cupped it and got him out. That's probably the only way we're going to get him out. But he would be number one. And then number two, pure genius, absolute genius of a player. a guy who can hit good balls for four at any stage, the great little left-hander from the West Indies, BC Lara. He was just exceptional. A pain in the ass when he gets going because it's hard to stop him, but you always know that there's a mistake somewhere. And for you got to get yourself into that space of he's going to cock this up. At some point, it's going to the fence. I'm going at fives. I'm going at sixes at the moment against Lara.
Yeah.
But you cannot back down in that fight. You just got to keep going, keep going, and keep pounding as hard as you possibly can because there's a mistake somewhere. Sometimes it didn't happen. But from pure genius, Lara would be my choice. And then the last pain in the ass is actually two pain in the asses. The most resilient, and that falls under the most resilient category, is the Aussie captain, Steve Waugh, because he loved a battle.
Yeah.
We often gone to, you know, you've heard that when some players say, don't challenge him lip-wise, just leave him alone.
Yeah.
But he is looking for that. He's looking for an opener. Even if you don't say anything, he'll poke you.
Yeah.
And then as soon as you open your gob... That's what he wants.
Yeah.
That is exactly what he wants. He wants to engage. I remember the 99 World Cup, and I'm pretty sure we're going to touch on that.
What 99 World Cup?
And at Headingley, Australia were three down. We all remember the famous popped out.
Gives up.
And till this day, the comments, whether it was right or not, or was never said, doesn't matter, but... Mm. He came out there and he thrived on that. Mm. He thrived on that. I'm looking forward to it. He told me straight up as they three down for nothing. As he walked past me, he said, "I'm looking forward to this, big dog. Looking forward to this." And he got 100.
Yeah,
he got 100. So not great to watch, but when it came to his team in trouble, he would be my most. That's a great man to have in the team. He was a great captain. But those three batters, those three players for me. Atherton, yeah, of course, he's a pain in the ass. Yeah.
Love that. I wasn't going to touch too much on the 99, but all I want to ask you from that is, do you think that whole experience made you a better coach?
Yeah.
And a better person as
a human being? Yeah. I'd say to people a lot, I said, listen, I'm not here to judge what Lance did. He did what he did, and that was the right decision for him in that moment.
Mm.
The right decision for me in that moment was not to have, what's his name, almost run me out the ball before.
Mm.
So
Fleming.
When I saw it come over me here, I knew there were two very close fielders, and for me the decision was there's still two balls to go after this.
Mm.
You're in the crosshairs, but for me that made me it made me think differently, definitely, as to how delicate you got to be to handle, to support players who've gone through that before, or will do in the future. So, but yeah, it was a pretty traumatic experience.
I didn't want to bring it up more for me, actually. I don't want to bring it up myself. I can only imagine what it was like for you. But it really was an insane moment in South African sport. But, you know, I want to kind of, you're coming to your partnership with Sean Pollock towards the latter end of your career. Why did you guys work? Like, what was the symbiotic relationship there?
I think test matches was different because more so test matches. Bob made a great move in taking the new ball away from me in ODI cricket. I actually liked it because it gave me time to settle into the game. So not opening that with Sean was a good move.
Okay.
But in test match cricket, because it, you know, we didn't have to talk about it, but Sean was like, he'll lock you away from ball one, and you know that it gives you leeway to go hard from ball one. And Hansie always used to say to me, your first five overs is the quickest of the test match. But I want to put, you need to make a statement in your role is to make a statement and lay in a foundation for us to have them in 10 for 2 in 5 overs or 8 overs. Mm. But it's how you set that up. So even if you go at, if you bowl 4 overs for 30 and you've taken 1, I'd be happy and then come back later. But to bowl with Sean was a, geez, and he was just the most accurate, just locked everything up. Mm. There was no way to, and I think the mindset has changed completely now in the test match landscape.
Mm.
The game has quickened up, but still the overall mindset's never changed. Mm. And it's just a matter of now in spells, two batters can take the game away from you in one session.
Yeah.
And that's how the game is developed now. So, but Sean was incredibly special to share the new ball with, 100%.
I wanted to ask you, when did you see Dale Steyn for the first time, and what did you think when you saw him?
I heard of him in 2004. Some reporter said to me, "There's this young kid. He's at school. He's going to come through. Watch him.
Mm.
Watch him. Dale Steyn. He's quick."
Mm.
And then a little bit later on, I watched him in Bloom absolutely demolish the Knights.
Mm.
And I thought, wow, superstar. Mm. This kid, he's going to be an absolute superstar.
Mm.
Racing from the...
The foundry, from the side screen.
The zoo end.
Yeah.
And he just knocked over stumps for fun.
Mm.
And we just knew that Dale Steyn is going to be an absolute superstar.
Can you see, like, when you watch youngsters these days, you're very involved in the young setup. Can you see a youngster who doesn't necessarily have the strength right yet? Can you see a superstar in the making?
100%. I see Mapaka now, Kwena Mapaka, and it's nice to be able to work with him. He's a baby still.
Mm.
I mean, where this kid is going at the moment, IPL contracts, and he's, you know... You just stand next to him and you see doing his things.
Mm.
You know, he's got almost too many skills.
Mm.
And our mission now is to keep him, bring him in to make him a little bit more basic, a little bit more structured in just committing to some basic skills.
Mm.
So
love that.
And
because the guys, I mean, it's not their fault. There's all these leagues around the world and they get picked up, but do they spend a winter like we're now actually honing the actual skills and thinking about how you spoke earlier on about setting up an over?
Yeah.
That with all these leagues around the world, and they don't get a break, they don't get this grounding.
I think he's been so far ahead of anyone at school level that he figured it out.
Okay.
So 219 World Cups, the player of the World Cup. I mean, we saw what he did in South Africa. You know, so, and he was playing with Riley Norton, you know, he's now knocking the rugby world out at the moment. So, but you see him at practice and so we need, you know, so what's this ball about? It's putting him in scenarios and say, and then he goes back of the hand, slow ball, off cutter, knuckle ball, seam up, wobble seam. So it's, nice. His variations is big.
Yeah.
But then all of a sudden he starts losing a stock ball, and his stock ball is bending it massively back into right-handers and away from right-handers. But the sequence of setting up the over is not like, just stick a little bit longer with that stock ball of yours. Don't go too quickly to, so now his wrist is a little bit past here and he's like missing it a lot.
Mm.
And then that, you know, all these variations, all of a sudden you lose your stock delivery. So it can creep in.
Mm.
So just, so he's going to spend a bit of time with us now at the DP World Lions. And he's going to be part of the South African test squad. There's no question.
Yeah.
So we won't see him a lot.
Mm.
But it's also lucky to have Gerald Kusia now with us as well. So,
yeah, I saw that. That's a good signing, You've had a lot of involvement with Gerald. I mean, he's obviously from Bloom, like you've seen him from a young age.
You
know, injuries have hampered him a little bit, but he's still got that natural ability. There's certain things that you can't teach a fast bowler. They either have it in them or 100%. Or not, or is that a fair statement?
100%. Unfortunately, that is what it is. And it's like someone telling me, you know, you're consistently bowling at 132, but how can I bowl 140? So, a lot have to go right for you to be able to do that.
Yeah.
And that's just genetics. That's just biokinetics. Anyway, there's so much stuff that goes into it. But Gerald is a super kid. He's had rotten luck with injuries. And let's hope that he gets over that, because I can see with the amount of test cricket that South Africa have got ahead of them this summer, he will definitely also be part of that backup bowling group.
When you watch South African cricket and you've been involved coaching with SA20 a bit as well, are you excited by the talent, not just the fast bowling talent, but the general talent, the batters coming through? You know, I'm watching MLC at the moment. You've got Matthew Bredsker,
yeah.
You've got Jordan Herman playing county cricket. You've got all the Leandro Pretorius is smashing it in the MLC. How excited are you about our talent in South Africa?
Talking about those Jordan brothers, that's scary talent. That is
Ruben and
unbelievable.
And Jordan, yeah.
Unbelievable. You know, the two of them are making waves. You know, like you say, he's playing for Somerset at the moment. Man, I am very excited. Yes, I am super. And you can see that we've now had, four editions of SA20? And you can already see there's a bunch of stuff happening, and especially white ball cricket, especially. And I think this South African team that we've got now, and what Shukri Conrad has got to pick from, good luck to him for that, because that's going to be a very tough decisions to be made. But we've got a great squad, and I truly believe, not putting you under the pump, coach, but I truly believe that if ever there was a time that South Africa can win a World Cup, is now. They've got all of the ingredients to be able to go and win this thing. Bowling, batting, there's such a great blend, balance. From your quicks to your all-rounders, the depth is, for the first time, is really, really looking lucrative.
I wanted to ask you about your relationship with KG Rabada. You've been involved from a coaching point of view a little bit with him towards the early part of his career, but do you speak to him on a regular basis?
I message him a lot. He's sometimes not the most amazing coming back to you, but
that's not just him. That's every young cricketer.
But I had the privilege of handing him his first cap at Adelaide Oval in front of a massive crowd in his first T20, and he bowled absolute rockets that night. And for Shane Watson to come over and say this is a special talent. Was, you know, he was clocking 156, 157, and fastest ball recorded at 158.8.
Unreal.
So that is a speed bracket that we thought, and he just looked natural. And I just saw KG at the World Cup where he made his name there under 19 wise under Ray Jennings, and Ray just said, this guy's going to become box office. And he sometimes pops in and comes in as a bowl. He plays the odd game for us.
I forget he's technically nominated to the Lions.
Yeah. So when he does, we really appreciate that. And just his leadership around the group, especially the young guys, they all gravitate to him.
Yeah.
You know, so, and that's what we want.
Yeah.
But you mentioned it early on when you see something special, and undoubtedly, what an unbelievable character, what a bowler, what a performer, and you know, you always judge someone on his consistency, and he's been just that and more.
I actually, you know, in a bit of my research, you played 72 test matches, 330 wickets. He's played 73 test matches, actually, at this.
And he's got it quicker,
350 or 340 wickets. So
his conversion rate is that's why he's got, am I wrong in saying he's got the best strike rate in the game?
Yeah, he does.
Yeah. So there you go. And proven away, at home, Pakistan, India, South Africa, Australia. I mean, he just does it. Just does it consistently. It's actually quite frightening.
Dale, actually, and I was looking at your, you know, you can do a deep dive in cricket info stats, and I can tell you your stats from when you bowl in the first innings versus the second innings. But some of the best bowlers in the world have always thrived on away turfs. Dale Steyn said that he loved that. He knew he could take wickets anywhere around the world, and your stats kind of were similar as well. You didn't just take wickets in South Africa. Like, is that the difference between a legend and a great fast bowler?
Hansi's team meeting once, we arrived in India, and he said, "I don't, we can't be judged always playing at the Wanderers or Newlands or St. George's Park." He said, "Our biggest test, if we're going to be the best consistent test team in the world, we're going to have to be judged here. This is where we," and he had individual chats with me, every single bowler, what he expects from them. Mm. And for me was, this is how you're going to be judged. Mm. If you can do it here on these conditions, pitches, overheads, heat, humidity, if you can do it here, that's always, he always drive this fitness standard, which Patson Cox did the bleep test with a smoke in his hand. and he often told him the benchmark is level 13 on the bleep. No, the bleep doesn't get. It's a mind blowing run that no one ever. When you hear that thing go off bleep, and there is a way of running it, but Simo, that's when Hansi. When you arrive in a subcontinent, you need to be not only in really good form, but at the fittest you can possibly be.
Yeah.
And I think that's what we got right.
Incredible.
So, your reverse swing skills come into play. I was lucky enough to sit with Wasim Akram and Waka and how they execute reverse swing.
Mm.
They were no better than that. Mm. And that's where you get tested. The ball only swings for about 15 to 20 overs in Pakistan. As soon as that goes, if the ball doesn't move in the air, you're going to be fielding for a long time.
Yeah.
So you need to be... Your creativity will challenge your skill in every aspect.
Mm.
So that's what Nancy always used to say, and Bob Woolmer, you'll never be... When you walk away from here and you've done okay, if you've done well here, your skill level is much better than X, Y, and Z. Mm. And that's why I think is a real test.
Alan, it's been an incredible chat. And we're going to get to our final section of fast and furious questions, white lightning questions. Let's call it that for this purpose. But I just want to know Alan Donald today. You're a husband, you're a father, you're a grandfather. What gives you the most pleasure these days?
Well, it's not often we get like 4 months off and you see your grandchildren, they're coming here later on. to have kids is something incredible. And then you have your grandchildren. Mm. And then, look, this house on a Sunday is just family. So we often have a late lunch, and then that becomes messy. not because there's a keg there.
I heard something that SAB still, to this day, I don't know if it's true or not, it could just be legend, that they still deliver a keg once in a while to you.
So, yeah, that's true. So it all started as a bit of a joke.
Yeah.
So 2003 World Cup, I mentioned to the great mate of mine, Rob Fleming from SAB.
Yeah.
I said, "Listen, what about putting a keg in the house?" He goes, yeah, don't worry about it. You just focus on the World Cup and sort it out. So we went to a camp, and I lived in Bloem, and I got we had an outside bar area, and I walked in and I saw this thing standing there, and my wife never told me anything about it.
Mm.
And then, so how many years is that ago? 2003, and here it's still standing.
Amazing.
So I get a 50 liter keg every now and again. So I've got some thirsty golfers around here every now and again. Still have that amazing. Contact with SAB. It's been a long relationship.
Brilliant. I just want to touch on the Legend series as well, the Masters tournament, and you won it last year. You've been coached now a couple of years. First year, it wasn't taken so seriously.
Yeah.
Second year, AB's in the mix. You guys won the competition, and hopefully third year now. Just tell us about how fun that's
WCL,
been for you.
Like WCL, no one really knew what this, you know, it's the World Cricket Legends League, and it's, you know, every team has an owner. We're lucky enough for our guys, Game Changers in Dubai, it's our owners. And so the first year, day two, 7 injuries. So
off to a fly.
So Herschel Gibbs, day one, we had a bit of a run around at Edgbaston indoor nets, and I think it's probably the second or third ball Herschel faces. He overextends, hyperextends, does his knee. He's gone. He's out for the tournament. And then, but I mean, we were a late inclusion in there. So they on paper, that's a gun team.
Yeah.
It's an absolute
I remember
gun
seeing that team.
Thinking, God.
In your heydays.
You know, Dale struggling to make it to the crease. Vernon is struggling. Charles Langefeld is broken down in Northampton. So now we're in so much trouble that we've had to go and get a young Saral Avia and Jacques Neyman to come and bail us out. So
purely because they were in England at the time, literally.
They were playing club cricket and we were allowed to go and get them. So it was a mess. It was a mess. And but year two, we sat with our owners and we said, listen, we need to look at the age group. What's the qualification on the age group? So it's 32 and up.
Okay.
And then then all of a sudden the news that AB is available. And AB was pumped.
Mm.
He didn't come there to lose.
Yeah.
And we only have one team meeting and one and only team meeting. Mm. And we had a long net, actually. But you look around the change room and you think, wow, there's Hardis Viljoen, there's Duzi Willefier, and Parnell.
Mm.
And so we have a mobile bowling attack. Not a, you know, Jacques Callis clocking in at 51. He doesn't want to bowl. So it was a great tournament, actually, because you could see Australia bringing a lot younger players.
Mm.
And I've been told by Brett Lee that they're bringing a much younger team.
Really?
So expect...
Guys are starting to take it more seriously. And
I think so. I think if the league is going to... if people want to, and the viewership, I mean, you look at the ratings now, and
the
ratings for year two was skyrocketing. It was incredible.
Mm.
And I think if the standard the standard for 50-year-olds will drop.
Yeah.
And people won't watch.
Yeah.
You know, we all know Yuvraj Singh was a great player.
Yeah.
He played one game, he's out, he's done for the tournament.
Yeah.
So I think that standard needs to be brought down a little bit, or the age group, and I think that the skill level will be...
Yeah, I enjoyed it. I really did enjoy it.
We have 15 players that we're going to contract. I can't reveal too much, but it looks a good team, and once again, it's a fit mobile unit, and I think I can't wait for the Aussies because they say they're bringing some guns.
Brilliant.
So, it's happening in October.
Fantastic.
It'll be a great surprise.
I love it. Alan, we're just going to go to our final. We have a section called Play or Leave, quick fire questions. So picture yourself batting. Batting.
Duck.
Would you rather face yourself at peak pace or KG Rabada?
KG.
If you had to choose a stand to be named after you, would it be in Bloom or Birmingham?
Birmingham.
If you could line up one more battle against Atherton or Tendulkar, who would you pick?
Oh, Atherton.
Love it. Alan Donald in the SA20 auction, higher or lower than Dierwald Brevis's 16.5 million at your peak?
Oh, I'm going to back myself. I'm going to back myself.
100%. Love it. Listen, Alan, I mean, I don't think you're, as I said to Adrian when we interviewed him out at his farm in Elgin, I don't think you guys realize, you know, you had an impact on my generation and generations before us, but I don't think you realize how much impact you have had on us and the country as a whole. So just want to thank you for all the memories, all the white lightning, all the the moments, all the history, and really it's been an absolute privilege to an honour to be in your home today. Thank you for welcoming the biggest man in cricket, and we wish you, everything of the best for the Lions. Not too best, you know, if I'm talking with my Western Province love on, everything of the best, and just thank you for being such the absolute legend that
thank
you are.
Thank you for your nice words. It means a lot. Thank you so much. Thanks, mate. Thank you. Cheers.